As we are searching the origins of this group called the Collins Elite, we learned from Nick Redfern before the break about this guy, Jack Parsons, who is so famous, I guess, and so revered in aerospace circles and rocketry circles. They've got a crater on the moon that was named for him, and he'd had a home, a mansion, actually, in Southern California, and had these big, elaborate parties where the likes of Robert Heinlein and Ray Bradbury were regular visitors, according to Nick Redfern's book, Final Events. Nick, tell me how L. Ron Hubbard and Robert Goddard fit into this very interesting mix, along with the likes of Aleister Crowley.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, George, Parsons became fascinated with Crowley's work and having an interest in the occult. He began to go down the same path. Essentially, looking at the idea of contacting whatever these otherworldly entities are or were at the time. And he engaged in something known as the Babylon Working in 1946. And basically what happened was that L. Ron Hubbard became friends with Parsons. And, you know, they spent time together hanging out, etc. And Hubbard became fascinated by Parsons' work. You know, they became good friends. And actually, Parsons wrote a letter to Crowley himself, and he wrote, I'm just quoting parts from it here, I deduce that he, i.e. Hubbard, is in direct touch with some higher intelligence. And he continued that he's in complete accord with our own principles. So, in other words, Parsons and Hubbard hit it off, and Parsons began setting up this extensive magical ritual known as the Babylon Working. And the whole goal of this particular project was to try and, I guess, invoke some sort of being very, very similar to the one that Crowley had brought into our world decades earlier, this so-called large-headed, bald-headed lamb creature.
And Parsons got one, right?
Yeah, Parsons got one. Basically, what happened was that a couple of weeks later, a woman arrived on the scene named Marjorie Elizabeth Cameron, very beautiful woman, and Parsons deduced or concluded that this was evidence that the rite and ritual had worked, that this, you know, he'd summoned this woman up and she'd suddenly arrived on the scene. And that sort of set the scene for Parsons believing that he actually could achieve what Crowley had achieved 30 years previously. Now, you also mentioned Robert Goddard. What happened with Robert Goddard is that he was a colleague, not necessarily a friend, they were kind of rivals, but he was a colleague of Parsons, and he was also deeply involved in early rocket research and chose to move his base of operations to, of all places, Roswell, New Mexico. In the summer of 1947, we know that Parsons actually met none other than Kenneth Arnold, the man who arguably ushered in the modern era of flying saucers.
Now it's getting complicated.
Yeah. But what happened was that Parsons knew L. Ron Hubbard. L. Ron Hubbard wrote a lot of actually very good and acclaimed science fiction. He wrote a lot of stories, etc., short stories, books. L. Ron Hubbard, being in the realm of science fiction, was acquainted with Ray Palmer. And Ray Palmer was the editor of a number of highly successful sci-fi magazines. And it so happens that Ray Palmer was also the editor, publisher, and co-author of Kenneth Arnold's book on his encounter called The Coming of the Saucers. And it was through this friend of a friend of a friend that Parsons and Arnold actually got to meet. Now, what was happening when as I mentioned before the break, there was this investigation into Parsons' loyalty or not because of the fact that he was working or trying to work with the Israelis on their rocket program. When it was found that he wasn't an espionage agent, but he'd just been reckless with government documents, he was fired from Hughes Aircraft and lost his top secret clearance. But Richard Duke, this elderly group member of the Collins Elite I met not long after speaking with Ray Beauchesne, he said that he and a number of the other people who were involved in these early investigations of Parsons' background, the more they dug into it as part of this espionage operation, the more that they learned about his, as he called it, his other life, you know, the occult life. And they became fascinated by it. And even when the operation had come to a halt and it was closed down, you know, as he described it to me, they would get together and meet sometimes after work and discuss, you know, what they'd found out about Parsons. They found him to be like a fascinating guy with an interesting, although as they saw it, weird life. And, you know, they were sort of looking further into what his belief systems. And it was then that they found the crossovers with the whole UFO thing. Richard Duke told me the fact that he knew Arnold was interesting. And being on the inside, they said they'd heard rumors about that the Roswell incident wasn't a weather balloon. They weren't actually briefed back then on what had happened, but they said we all knew it wasn't just a weather balloon. And then when they found that he was associated with Goddard out at Roswell, Richard Duke said it was a case of really of us just trying to put together a few strands and threads of what possibly seemed to be something interconnected. And according to Richard Duke, the whole situation was sort of pretty fluid and relaxed up until about 1952. It was, as he described it, just people, colleagues, friends getting together and discussing it after work. And then in some point in 52, just after Parsons was killed, he actually blew himself up in his lab. What happened was that somebody said, well, you know, something along the lines of Project Blue Book and the old Project Grudge didn't have much success or aren't having much success in trying to resolve this. Why don't we channel some money to these guys, make them an offer and take them out of their regular intelligence jobs and put them in like a think tank situation where they can research this angle, where they've actually made some intriguing threads of putting names and places together and just see if they can come up with anything. And to start with, it seems like it literally was, you know, they would just pay these guys their regular wage and they would sort of sit in an office in a round table situation, maybe no more than 9 or 10 of them to start with, and just pore over the open source material that was around at the time and just try and evaluate it and to see if it would fit more in this picture of, and the, you know, the whole Parsons-Crowley angle, if you like.